I've seen them all. No surprises on this one. Raw dogging it. Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It's a podcast where we talk about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. This guy over here is Max. How you doing, Max?
Hello. I'm doing pretty well.
Good. Was that real wooden delivery on my part? That was a genuine question. How are you? How's life? Things are going well?
Yeah, my tummy's a little upset right now.
Oh.
Because I ate a pizza that wasn't good.
You're feeling the adverse effects of doing something that you love.
I am.
So it's worth it, right?
Yeah, because it wasn't good when I was eating it. It was kind of a bad pizza.
Oh.
It was just like a frozen one.
Well, you know what they say about bad pizza. It's like sex, where even if it's bad, it's still pretty good. That's what I hear anyway.
I went to a famous local shop, Weiland's, to get said pizza, though, because I had to get some other things.
Yeah.
And I went to the liquor store that they have in there, which is really good. And I was, like, buying my stuff, and I was basically buying Bud Light Lime, like, off-brand Bud Light Lime.
Okay.
And I paid, and I forgot that I had a sign, so I was, like, I pulled my chip card out and was, like, putting my wallet away, and the cashier was like, oh, you have to sign. And I was like, oh, sorry, I just have one hand in my pocket. And she said, what's the other one doing, playing a piano?
Oh, shit, a little Alanis reference?
Yeah. And for some reason, mentally, I was like, oh, this person made a fun joke. I need to be a jackass to them. And I said, oh, like that Alanis Morissette song. And then just kind of like walked away.
Oh, no.
Now I can never go back to Weiland's.
You're doomed now.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
For some reason, that made sense for me to do.
You were just real rude for no reason. That's my favorite. I love when people do that.
I kind of like giving other people the impression that I'm a big idiot that doesn't know what I'm talking about, even though supposed former infatuation junkie is probably one of my top five albums. Top 10, definitely.
Jagged Little Pill was definitely a fixture of my childhood.
Hell yeah. It's good.
It's a great album. Love Alanis. Hey, I am primed to talk about death today. You want to know why?
Why?
I was walking here from my car down the street. By the way, we are back on location in the Pre-Dead Boys studio. We've come down from the castle.
We've got the blanket back up.
The blanket's back up. And as I was walking down the sidewalk, I saw...
Oh, yeah!
A very gnarly dead thing.
It was a possum.
Is it a possum?
It was.
It was so dead, I couldn't tell. Really? A possum? Its legs were kind of long. I thought it was either a cat or a raccoon. That's how dead it was.
Yep. No, it was a possum, because I saw that a couple days ago when it was intact. And then I've been tracking its progress.
Yeah.
And it is not doing well.
No. Very dead. I kind of took a moment where I was like, wait, I can't just walk past this. I need to look upon this, engage in a little bit of terror management.
Yeah.
And reflect on how I one day will be like this possum. And I took one whiff of that thing. I was like, oh, fuck me. I'm out of here. It was reeking.
I'm going to be walking.
Yeah, it was very smelly. So,
well, it's just rain, too, so all the bot flies that are in it are kind of getting out.
Real hydrated and juicy dead body. Very good.
With that dry, mummified possum.
So, with that in mind, I'm ready to talk about death. What kind of death stuff have you prepared for us today, Max?
Well, I'm just here to get to the Bud Light Lime quicker. I just wanted to kick this off asking you what you thought about Y2K. Do you remember what you were doing when Y2K happened?
I don't remember what I was doing the day of, but I remember I would get Time magazine for kids and the cover story, which basically was the entire thing since it was five pages. it was about Y2K. And I remember looking at it like, what's the big deal? and basically nothing really happened. So fifth grade Dorian was right about everything. Perfect track record there.
I think I was in scouts at the time. Okay. So I got Boys Life or Contact Kids or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an article that was much more fear-mongery.
Ooh, okay.
So I was very scared about Y2K. And my parents were, like, not doing a good job of not convincing me that it wasn't going to happen. Because my dad did financial stuff. So he was kind of like, well, I hope all the computers are all right.
So he was worried about it, too.
I remember him being a little worried.
Yeah.
But I was super nervous because at that point I was, like, 9. And I was panicking because I was like, well, so the logical outcome of this is that one day I'm going to die. And then everyone who ever remembers me is going to die. And then everyone who's ever heard my name is going to die. And then every computer is going to get Y2K virus. And then my gravestone's eventually going to break down. And then no one's going to remember me in the future.
For some reason, we are now 11 episodes in. I'm finally at the point where I'm like, whoa, Max, getting a little morbid, dude.
Yeah. Y2K was formative for me.
Huh. Interesting.
But what we're going to be talking about today is tangential on the millennium and thousand-year time periods.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured it'd be kind of a good segue. We're going to be talking about our mortality and the future.
All right.
So without further ado, let's crack into the topic with the still unofficial, still unsponsored Pre-Dead Boys Crack Into the Moment. Not yet sponsored by LaCroix. Hoping to get there soon.
We've got an orange flavor today. It's very refreshing, citrusy zest.
Yeah, it's nice. That's not a flavor that I have purchased much.
Yeah.
I had peach pear last week for the first time.
Ooh, that's a wild one.
It kind of tastes like a peach ring that melted.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good. I like it.
I love peach rings.
Best candy.
You know what the problem with peach rings is? Too much sugar. You know how much sugar is in a LaCroix? It's no sugar.
Zero.
But what kind of sweetener? No artificial sweeteners.
Wait. Well, how do they make it taste so good? Is it sodium?
No, it's naturally essenced. And there's no sodium. There's nothing in it. It's magical. It's a magical beverage.
We're in like a desperation march for this LaCroix right now.
Please!
So, as cool as the future is...
Should we talk about this? Should we talk about how you left your mouth photo in the show notes? Or should we just go...
I did leave my mouth photo in the show notes, and for that, I apologize. I have cadaver teeth now.
Dude, that's so rad. Can you explain to the listeners real quick just what you mean by that, by cadaver teeth?
So, I got a tooth removed about a month ago, maybe 2 months at this point.
And you love dental work, right? You're a big fan of just people getting in there and jostling your teeth around with metal objects.
Huge fan. Like, I love it to the point where I get so excited they have to make me pass out, because otherwise I will pass out on my own.
Right.
But they gave me the nitrous.
Like NOS, like in Fast and Furious?
And hell yeah. Go really quick. So they gave me nitrous before the operation to calm me down a little bit. And it was like an over-nose kind of cup.
Mm-hmm.
But my nose is really big, so they had a hard time doing that. But they were giving me the nitrous, and they were like very clearly asking me questions to kind of gauge how with it I was.
Right.
And I knew that once they pulled the tooth out to put an implant tooth in, they had to pack and regrow the bone, but bone won't just regrow. So they have to pack it with a, basically like a stand-in, a fill-in. I was asking the nurse, I was like, so I says to the nurse, I says, what's going to go into the cavity after you pull the tooth out? And she was like, it's the same material we use for everything. It's completely safe. It's completely normal. And I was like, yeah, but what is it? Is it like an artificial thing or is it fragments of bone? And she was like, it's fragments of bone, but again, it's totally safe. It's totally normal. And I'm like getting kind of riled up at this point. And I'm like, is it like pig bone or cow bone or is it like cadaver bone? And she's like, it is cadaver bone, but like genuinely, it's very safe. It's what we use for everything. It's totally normal. And I'm in the chair going like, hell yes. And she's like cranking the NOS up as high as she can to knock me out as quick as possible.
Hell yeah, really, dude. Goofy. That's awesome. I'm a little jealous. I'm a little jealous that you got a little bit of dead people in your mouth.
Yeah. And every once in a while, a little fleck will fall down and I'll be like, oh, that's...
Oh, yeah. Bone. Nice.
I'm better now, though. So...
Did you produce all of the cadaver tooth out now? Or you
still got some in there? Yeah, and it's sealed up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And now the dead people are a part of you forever.
So we do a lot of cool things for the future.
Hoverboards,
cool movies.
Cool vape rigs.
Vape stunts, duels. But we're also pretty continually messing things up for future generations as far as pollution, climate change, stuff like that.
Yep.
And, you know, I didn't really do a lot of research into this, so forgive me if it's a stupid thing to say. If it's a stupid thing to say, just edit it out. Edit this out, please.
I will edit this out. You will not hear this in the final episode.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. Why'd you wink?
What are you talking about? It's a twitch. It's a muscle twitch.
So there's a lot of great things out there that are powered by nuclear power. And for the most part, I think it's fairly safe, except for the big meltdowns like Fukushima and Three Mile Island.
But are those really a big deal? Really? Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Sweep it up. It's fine.
Sweep it up. If everything works and goes well and safety protocols followed, it's clean and it's efficient and it produces a lot of energy for cheap. But it also does produce nuclear waste as a byproduct.
Ooh.
That's less good.
Yeah.
So nuclear waste, as you would imagine, is bad if it sits around unprotected in like a steel drum for a long time.
True. Yes.
The radioactive period of plutonium-242 is about 2.5 million years, which is a long time.
That's quite a while.
Not really a great thing if we're trying to look out for our bros in the far future.
Yeah.
Trying to be solid.
Yeah, true.
So, sure, we've got a good handle on nuclear waste now, but what if something happens to us? There's a book, and it's called On the Beach.
Okay.
And it's about a group of people, I believe they're in Australia, and there's a nuclear disaster, and the whole world is basically approaching nuclear winter, and they realize they're going to be the only ones who survive because they're in Australia, and they're really far away. But imagine if future people get stuck somewhere with no boats, no power, and they lose all computers, like all information, and eventually they have to start humanity back up again. So a couple thousand years pass, and they finally make their way over back to North America. And they're walking through the desert, just looking for a place to create a settlement.
Right.
And they see a bunch of signs with that weird radioactive symbol on it that say, danger, radioactive.
Yeah.
But since they don't know anything about our culture, they look at that weird, like, circle with three weird shapes around it.
Yeah, toenails.
Yeah.
The three toenails.
They look at the circle with the three toenails.
Yeah.
That says, danger, radioactive. And they're like, I don't know what that means. That's weird. And they just keep walking. And they get radiation poisoning.
That sucks.
It sucks. And it's not very cool on us. So what are we supposed to do about it? A bunch of very smart people decided to get together and try and figure out how to deal with how are we going to warn people about nuclear waste in the far future. Here's a little quote about what they had to say.
To help answer this question during the preparations for waste isolation facilities, panels of experts were assembled comprised of individuals with backgrounds in history, future studies, economics, law, physics, sociology, geography, engineering, political science, risk analysis, agriculture, climatology, history, and demographics. This group was called the Futures Panel, and they were tasked with creatively exploring the possible reasons why a future society might penetrate deep underground nuclear waste storage facilities. They were also asked to advise on how to universally warn away would-be intruders.
Yeah, so how are we going to deal with the fact that future people are going to get into our nuclear waste disposal places?
And we put together a team of experts. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. That's a team, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
That reference almost even went above my head because I'm not old enough to remember when that was on TV.
I think there was a movie that I may have seen.
I don't know if that was worth seeing.
Yeah.
It had Rampage Jackson, who's, I don't know if he's worth seeing in anything that he's ever done.
So the fact that we all die makes it kind of hard to imagine life in the super far future. The reason for that being because it forces us to think way beyond ourselves, and we're inherently pretty self-centered.
Yep.
But in order to protect people from our invisible death garbage, a bunch of scientists had to do just that. They had to sit down and come up with some ideas about how to protect people from our garbage, basically.
Death garbage.
Death garbage.
I like that.
One of the things they came up with was this very erudite, wordy and pretty cool way to communicate to people who don't know a single thing about radiation, that radiation is extremely dangerous and will kill them,
mm-hmm.
while also not making these people think we were trying to trick them and stop them from stealing buried treasure or something.
Yeah, that would be an immediate thought. What are they hiding? Like, you know, check out these toenail barrels.
You know those, like the King Tut's tomb thing?
In Egypt, they would bury their pharaohs with gold, right? And all kinds of treasures?
They would. There was also always like a note or an inscription that was like, cursed is anyone who enters here.
Yeah.
And we were just kind of like, yeah, whatever.
I'll take the hit.
So we had to convince people that that's actually bad and you can't do that. And this is the message that they came up with.
This place is a message and part of a system of messages. Pay attention to it. Sending this message was important to us. We considered ourselves to be a powerful culture. This place is not a place of honor. No highly esteemed deed is commemorated here. Nothing valued is here. What is here is dangerous and repulsive to us. Ugh. This message is a warning about danger. The danger is in a particular location. It increases toward a center. The center of danger is here, of a particular size and shape, and below us. The danger is still present in your time as it was in ours. The danger is to the body, and it can kill. The form of the danger is an emanation of energy. The danger is unleashed only if you substantially disturb this place physically. This place is best shunned and left uninhabited.
Isn't that cool?
The danger! I love how wooden and weirdly robotic this language is, too.
Yeah.
The danger.
The phrasing, the danger is to the body, is really weird.
I just really can envision this being a wrestling promo for a wrestler who goes by the danger.
The danger.
I think it'd work really well.
Just building off our last episode, I was a big fan of this black metal band. They're not death metal, but this black metal band called Novlar.
Yep.
You know how bands will intro their album with like a sample or something like that?
Yeah.
They sampled a Coast to Coast AM broadcast of something called The Pit to Hell. And it's just Art Bell reading this promo about these sounds from this Russian pit to hell. And it's like the coolest intro to an album ever. It's so rad.
I gotta look that one up.
And this would be an extremely cool thing to put in front of an album.
For sure. Yeah, shout out to all of our listeners who are in hardcore bands. We got you some quality sample gold.
We got some good band names coming up in this one, too.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm stoked.
But an issue with this very cool message is, what happens if people in the future don't use written language as we know it?
Hmm.
So other options that got floated include leaving tons of bones and skeletal remains at nuclear waste sites.
Yeah!
And somehow this would communicate to people that these places are dangerous and bad.
Uh-huh.
But that very clearly communicates to us that the place is very cool.
Yeah, we would definitely ransack that place and die in the process.
And die. Very bad radiation poisoning. And also, every time people who are smarter than us and have archaeology degrees have found a bunch of bones, they're like, oh, this is cool. We should keep digging where all the bones are.
Right.
So I don't know why people thought that that was a good idea.
Right.
But whatever. Some scientists said that we should just leave it completely unmarked and hope for the best. The thought being, if we bury it in the middle of the desert, no one's going to want to live there anyway. So it shouldn't be a huge deal.
Yeah.
But also, like, Phoenix, Arizona exists. I think that's in the middle of a desert.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of infrastructure there.
So I don't really know why they thought that would be a good idea either.
Hmm. This is tricky.
It's tricky, and one of the best ways to communicate this would be having people around to actually do it. And that's why one of the ideas that was floated is about the nuclear priesthood. So why don't you read about what that is?
With pleasure. The linguist Thomas Sebiak was a member of a futures panel. He proposed the creation of an atomic priesthood, a panel of experts where members would be replaced through nominations by a council. Explicitly based on the Catholic Church, which has preserved and authorized its message for over 2,000 years, the atomic priesthood would have to preserve the knowledge about locations and dangers of radioactive waste by creating rituals and myths. The priesthood would indicate off-limits areas and the consequences of disobedience.
I like this idea a lot.
Me too. This is dope.
I like the image of a bunch of people in big hazmat suits living in monasteries.
Yeah.
And having to warn people.
Yeah, I would be really surprised if this weren't already a book or a movie of some kind, that there is an atomic priesthood.
Yeah.
Atomic priesthood is a fantastic band name. We're basically doing the work for some band out there. Just take notes.
Well, it's also kind of like you're mashing up two Columbus bands. You got Nuclear Moms.
Yes.
Future Nuns.
Yeah.
I guess it's not nuns.
It's close enough that I love it.
Radioactive. Religious Order.
That's a good formula for a band name, frankly. Dude, I love Nuclear Moms.
They're very cool.
I fucking love that band so much. I don't really know any of the guys personally, but their music is incredible.
I'm a big Future Nuns fan, which makes sense because I like talk rock a lot.
Those two bands kind of encapsulate, I think, our personality quirks and differences.
I'm like really angular talk rock.
And I'm just like... talking about skateboards and being mad at my parents.
So these nuclear priests would have to create new aspects of culture surrounding these waste sites.
Yeah.
Which is really cool in and of itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is kind of how that Futures panel decided they would have to do it.
It would mean using what they call atomic folk objects to create an oral tradition of myths associated with nuclear sites. Imagine stories, objects, costumes, and rituals all being used to convey the danger, and power of nuclear sites and the taboo of digging up the radioactive material buried there. Meticulous illustrations of a fantastical world juxtaposing industrial mineshafts, nuclear power stations with a prone, mummified body, and dangerous wolf, all illuminated by an eerie yellow glow. In order to imagine the far future, we have to drudge up the images and implementations of the past. This is exactly what the atomic priesthood idea is all about, using our collective human memory to speculate on our shared future.
Again, only cool things.
Yeah, I am getting a glowing atomic wolf for my next tattoo, I think.
Industrial mineshafts is very cool. Like, there's nothing that's not cool about that.
Isn't that a genre of music?
Industrial noise. You know, as cool as this theory is, it does create a privileged group of people who hold a secret and dangerous knowledge, which I don't think has ever worked out poorly in real life or fiction in the past.
Yeah, you're right. Sure. Let's blow past that. You got your church and your state. Why don't you just mash them together? Right?
With science.
Yep, that'll work.
So the nuclear priesthood idea also has its flaws. But as these theories have evolved, they've turned into a new field of linguistic study known as nuclear semiotics. Semiotics being the term used in linguistics as a whole to refer to the study of signs and symbols and how we interpret them. A couple folks came up with a much cuter way for us to warn people about nuclear waste. Ray cats.
Yes.
I'm really amped on ray cats. They're super cute.
I love this idea so much. The idea of ray cats was put forth by two French authors, François Bastide and Paulo Fabri. They suggested the creation of radiation cats, or ray cats, whose fur would change into bright iridescent colors when exposed to high levels of radiation. Cats and humans have cohabitated for thousands of years already. And there's no reason why that would end anytime soon, especially when cats survive well as strays already. All we would need to do would be to genetically engineer the cats, and then create a series of myths or songs about cats' colors changing when they're in dangerous places.
This idea was... I don't think it was a joke. I genuinely don't think these dudes were goofing.
Yeah.
But the second it hit the internet, its combined kind of outrageousness and the fact that it's about cats... It spread like wildfire, and people were goofing on this stuff hard.
It's good source material.
Yeah. It's kind of cool because people actually started doing what the idea was intended to do. People were developing folklore and songs about radioactive cats.
We're well underway then.
Yeah, we're well underway. We just got to start putting genes in those cats. Doing some splicing. Chad Matheny, who performs folk punk experimental music under the name Emperor X, wrote and released a song entitled 10,000 Year Earthworm to Discourage Settlement Near Nuclear Waste Repositories. Which is a cool title for a song.
That's a little bit of a mouthful. I don't know how catchy the title is, but...
The song is very catchy, though. And we're going to drop a little clip of it in right here.
Oh, yeah.
Don't change color, kitty, keep your color, kitty, stay that pretty gray. Don't change color, kitty, keep your color, kitty, keep sickness away. Don't change color, kitty, keep your color, kitty, please, cause if you do, or glow your luminescent eyes, you're all gonna have to move.
Isn't that a sweet little song?
It's real cute. It's really funny.
I really hope the Ray Cat idea takes off, just so this song is the new folk song of America.
I love how willfully naive it is to, like, it's radiation. We don't know what that is other than it destroys everything.
Yeah. What's the one line? Like,
don't change color, kitty. Keep your color, kitty. Stay that midnight black. The radiation that the change implies can kill, and that's a fact. The radiation, whatever that is something we don't want, because it withers our crops and it burns our skin and it turns our livestock gaunt.
It's so nice.
So pleasant. So cute. It'd
be kind of cool to put a harmless little gene into cats and just have them glow.
Yeah.
You know, I guess it would be very bad if you ever saw it, but
yeah.
It would be kind of cool. You would have to come up with some kind of super scary story that establishes that, like, the second you see these cats change color, you got a jet.
Yeah, because yeah. If I didn't know that, I'd probably try to pet a glowing cat. I would think that that's pretty damn cool. And I'm a doofus.
So I guess it kind of doubles as a warning and a super good prank to play on future idiots. I don't know, that's kind of like bad future population control. That cat's glowing, I'm going to go pet it. And it's like, well, okay.
You idiot.
You dummy.
Don't pet glowing Ray cats. Glowing
Ray cats.
Don't you listen to the song?
So the idea of creating spooky stories for future generations is great and all. And the idea of creating glowing cats for future generations is exponentially cooler.
Very gnarly.
But what if we wanted to give future generations some art? You know, yeah. Something kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
So this next bit was inspired by an organization known as the Long Now. They're very interesting. And here's what they put forth as their mission statement.
The Long Now Foundation was established in 1996. To develop the clock and library projects, as well as to become the seed of a very long-term cultural institution. The Long Now Foundation hopes to provide a counterpoint to today's accelerating culture and help make long-term thinking more common. We hope to foster responsibility in the framework of the next 10,000 years.
That's 10 millennia.
That's a long-ass time.
Why 3K? Why 4K? Why 5K? And so on.
Why 10K?
10K. Woo. And that's the weird thing you probably noticed about that sentence. They wrote what we would call the year 1996 as 01996. They're really into the idea of this thing called deep time.
Mm-hmm.
So deep time is a concept used by geologists, biologists, and astronomers, smart people, as a way to talk about just how long the Earth has existed for. You know, like, they want you to think not in terms of decades and at most millennia, but they want you to think in terms of 10,000 year increments of time. So here's another bit from the National Center for Science Education on deep time.
The idea of deep time is the profoundly different time scale involved in geological and evolutionary processes than those we deal with in our daily lives. It is rare for those of us in North America to see buildings that are more than 200 years old. If the geological history of the world were represented by the height of the Empire State Building, the time since mastodons walked across North America 14,000 years ago would be represented by the thickness of a single dime.
It's ridiculous.
That's so much time. It's so difficult to understand that I need another slightly more complicated metaphor.
I need like a more like nuanced analogy to explain how big a dime is in relation to the Empire State Building.
Yeah. Yeah, for some reason, coins and tall buildings, it's the only way I can understand things.
It's kind of like the terracotta army size, or how big a blue whale is.
Right.
Like one of those things that you learn about when you're a kid, but your dumb kid brain isn't smart enough to really grasp the size.
Yeah.
Like when the terracotta army, how that's the size of Miami.
Yeah, that was absurd. Yeah, your kid brain is just, like, your teacher is like, do you understand that 14,000 years ago? And you're like, yeah, whatever. I'm going to play Fortnite.
Yeah, I'm a teen. And then when you think about how dinosaurs died 65 million years ago, and then how many 14,000s go into 65 millions, which I am not going to figure out.
How many dimes is that? Tell me.
It's
tell
like
me.
Painting a single dime into a swimming pool size pool of dimes.
That's too many analogies.
It's too many. Eventually you hit critical analogy mass and it just all collapses in on itself like a dying star. But by putting a zero in front of the year,
yeah,
the Long Now Foundation is hoping to highlight the fact that just like a dime compared to the Empire State Building, time is way bigger than any of us think on a daily basis.
Yeah. So it gets you to think about a 10,000 year scope by using five digits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that zero is there for a reason.
Right. We're only in the O's, like O 2018.
You're at the start of a much longer period of time.
We're not even at 1 2018 yet.
Yeah.
Is that how you would say it? How would you say it? If the year were 12018, how would you say it?
12,018?
12018?
12018?
12018?
12K18?
Ooh, yeah.
12K18 sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I like that. That rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
We'll worry about it in 10,000 years.
Future people have that to deal with.
Yeah.
But the musician Brian Eno is a major figure in this Long Now movement.
Nice.
And he was actually the one who named it. When I say the here and now, what do you think most Americans think?
The 5 minutes between now and when I walk to the fridge and get a sandwich.
Yeah.
I don't know. Not very far into the future.
Yeah, because he argues that our culture is very based in immediacy and speed.
Yeah.
So Brian Eno is English, and even in England, they have a different range for the here and now.
Uh-huh.
I guess they move a little slower. And when you say the here and now in England, it means kind of a wider range of time, maybe a couple days, as opposed to the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, okay. So more like the current era that we are living in rather than today.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's not as much of our own individual faults as much as the Long Now Foundation views that as being the fault of society and our kind of go, go, go attitudes having created that priority system.
Right.
So Frank Ostasecki is a big figure in the death positive end of life care community. And he gave a speech at a Long Now seminar where he explained this idea.
I'm not romantic about dying. This is the hardest work you will ever do. It is tough. It's sad, and it's messy, and it's cruel, and it's beautiful sometimes and mysterious, but above all that, it's normal. It's a boat we're all in. It's inevitable and intimate. Reflection on death causes us to be more responsible in our relationships, with ourselves, with the planet, with our future.
So if you think back to our terror management theory episode, you remember how we talked about famous sitcom actor Ted Danson playing Ernest Becker.
Right.
Said that we create society because we all fear death and we feel a profound need to distract ourselves from that fear.
Right.
The Long Now believes that the increased immediacy and speed and pace of culture is a direct reaction to kind of bury that fear of death even more.
Makes sense.
So they believe that current trends like fashion and music is to prevent ourselves from thinking about death too much. So because, you know, they know that people are inherently selfish. And when we go, oh, what really matters is the 80 or so years that I live. They've put that zero in front of 2018 to remind us that we are small in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
You know, time is going to continue on for a long time past we're dead.
Right.
And their goal is to make us more aware of how the things that we leave are going to affect future generations. by having that zero there, it kind of forces us to think about what's going to happen 8,000 years in the future, mm-hmm. in the year 10,000, instead of just 50 years from now.
Right.
Where I might be getting close to the end of my life.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and to think about how different stuff might be then. As an extreme pessimist, I don't know if we're going to be able to make it another 8,000 years.
Yeah. We'll see. Except we won't, because we'll be dead.
Well, you and I will be dead.
Well, you'll be dead. I'll be frozen. Ready to rock at a moment's notice.
Ready to pop out and be like, you dumb idiots. I told you cryonics wouldn't work. Ah, shit.
I'll live forever.
I was proven wrong. But I'm also alive. So one of the ways the Long Now Foundation is attempting to reach the year 10,000 is through art. The clock of the Long Now is a very cool way that they're attempting to do that. And this is a summary that they have on their website of what that clock could be like.
There is a clock ringing deep inside a mountain. It is a huge clock, hundreds of feet tall, designed to tick for 10,000 years. Every once in a while, the bells of this buried clock play a melody. Each time the chimes ring, it's a melody the clock has never played before. The clock's chimes have been programmed to not repeat themselves for 10,000 years. Most times the clock rings when a visitor has wound it, but the clock hoards energy from a different source, and occasionally it will ring itself when no one is around to hear it. It's anyone's guess how many beautiful songs will never be heard over the clock's 10 millennial lifespan.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So the foundation is currently building said clock inside a mountain in Texas. That land, weirdly enough, is owned by Jeff Bezos.
Oh, okay.
Bezos. Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos. He put up the money for that land. They also have land for a final version, like a fully produced version, inside something called Mount Washington in Nevada. But the issue with putting up something that's going to last for 10,000 years is stuff breaks.
Yeah, true.
You got to watch out for it.
Yeah.
So the Long Now Foundation thought about this, and they've listed some principles of longevity.
To maintain the longevity of the clock, avoid sliding friction or gears, which will eventually get ground down. The clock must stay clean and try to prevent warping and erosion of the materials. Expect bad weather, earthquakes, and non-malicious human interaction. If this is to be a monument to inspire generations in the future, the clock must be easily accessible, but remain protected from the hazards of the natural world. Finally, don't tempt thieves. Keep it simple.
Basically, don't cover it in gold.
Damn!
And rubies.
Damn, could you imagine how badass this mountain clock would be if it were all gold? All gold everything.
Just a big encrusted gold ruby clock? I don't know.
Clock with grinding gears! Because you know how long gold lasts when you just smash gold gears together. At least 10,000 years, I'm sure. At least
10,000. So they noted in the design that erosion is a big issue.
Right.
You use anything over a long enough time and it's going to break. And that's especially true of a clock that's going to run for 10,000 years. So the Long Now Foundation has also developed some principles not only for longevity, but also for continued maintenance and repair of the clock.
Hmm. To provide for maintenance of the clock, use familiar and easily obtainable materials. Allow for easy access and inspection. Make it easy to build spare parts with relatively simple technologies. Finally, include the manual, preferably engraved or integrated, into the design of the machine.
A lot of this maintenance stuff is important because, you know, presumably, a lot of things are going to change in the next 10,000 years.
Yeah.
If the Long Now Foundation is going to keep up their goal of maintaining this clock for such a long time, they're going to have to make people value and feel a sense of ownership about this exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
If we end up having a nuclear war that eradicates a lot of life and knowledge and the power grid, you're also going to have people who care enough about this clock to work pretty hard at maintaining it. So there are a couple similar installations of art to these clocks as well. John Cage.
He fucking would make some weird shit. What did he make, Max?
Incredibly pretentious musician. Has an ongoing piece entitled As Slow as Possible, which he wrote in 1987.
Uh-huh.
It's currently being played at St. Burkhardi's Church in Halberstadt, Germany. Deutschland.
I have a feeling that when you say currently being played, you're not talking about like, yeah, the band, they have a house band that plays it every night.
Oh, no. It's a big organ, and this organ was programmed to start playing this piece on September 5th, 2001, and it will keep playing until September 5th, 2640.
2640?
639 years.
Good Lord.
That's not even the longest. There's a piece called Long Player, which is an algorithmic piece of music.
Now, why is it called that?
Oh, it plays for a very, very, very long time.
Oh, okay.
That's being played at actually various places around the world, but it was created by Jan Feiner, who was in the English punk band The Pogues, which is goofy.
Okay, I always kind of considered John Cage the poor man's Pogues, so this makes sense.
But Long Player started on January 1st, 2000, and will run until December 31st, 2999, which is 1,000 years.
Damn.
Yeah. So these pieces extend to more than music, too. There's a piece of literature that is actually being continually worked on in a similar fashion.
In the Netherlands, there is a poem named The Letters of Utrecht. It began on June 2nd, 2012, and every Saturday at 1 p.m., they engrave the next letter of the poem into the cobblestone. The Letters of Utrecht technically has no end, and can keep being added to as long as there are cobblestones in the city.
Yeah, it's cool to think of this kind of long-form, long-term poem.
Mm-hmm.
I think the poem is actually on its sixth poet.
So they rotate the poets who contribute to it?
Yeah.
How does that work?
There's a new poet every year. I think when you're nominated to be the one who writes this,
yeah,
you get 52 weeks, so 52 letters to map out and write your portion of the poem.
Okay.
And then the next poet who comes in has 52 more. It's kind of like an exquisite corpse, you know, when you have the drawing where everyone draws one line and you see what you can make out of it, or like a one-sentence story.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a cool exercise in both long-term art creation and almost like the form of poetry, where these poets are really wrestling with how can I communicate what I want to in 52 characters.
Yeah, working in a real weird format.
Yeah.
I'm sure it puts you in a strange situation creatively.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
But I like to think about that, like the creation of art as it goes past our lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, it's only going to be able to be enjoyed by people who will never know, probably.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me a little bit of like, you know, you and I are in the same church and talk about eternal perspective, the idea that this life is not the only
thing. The be all and all. Yeah.
And it's kind of cool that a lot of these principles seem to embody that in a very practical way. That you need to think beyond just the scope of your life, not only for the sake of the environment and the planet, but also just for, you know, you can potentially contribute to the well-being of other people.
Yeah.
1,000, 10,000 years down the line, if you're not just trapped in this immediate selfish, you know, way of thinking that we all kind of find ourselves in.
Yeah, once you get out of that bubble of thinking my life is my own and the planet exists for me or this world exists only for me, you're really able to kind of contribute to bigger society in a neat way.
Yeah.
And I think that these organizations reflect the desire that a lot of us have to do that, you know? It's like, I want to create something that lasts for future generations or something that has an impact on a long time frame, like an eternal time frame. And it's cool to think that this is a way that people are attempting to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Good food for thought.
So unless you have any other reactions, that's all I had for Nuclear Priests, Ray Katz, and Deep Time.
Yeah, cover something interesting next time. No, I'm just kidding. This is a buck wild set of topics, but it's pretty cool stuff to think about. Thanks for putting that together, Max.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our show. Hey, if you want to support us, we want to talk real quick about a few ways and give some shout-outs where shout-outs are due. We love positive feedback. We love affirmation.
I need it.
I need it. Please. If you want to give us some positive affirmation, you can do that on Apple Podcasts. Max, I got three. That's right. Three 5-star reviews to read this week.
Oh, buckle in.
All right. First one is from Daybeck. I don't know if that's an abbreviation
Dothraki?
Or it might be.
Is that a Game of Thrones thing? I don't know.
Yeah, Dothraki, or you know, I was thinking some kind of like Lovecraftian thing. Hopefully less racist. No, they don't seem racist at all. This review is very nice. Daybackg says, life changing. Pre-Dead Boys has turned my life around. Meghan Markle, princess. The weather, a tame, sunny, and breezy 78 degrees. Me, feeling alive and hydrated by a satisfying melon pomelo LaCroix.
Ooh, that's tall can.
Yeah, dipping in tall can territory. Fancy. I owe it all to this podcast. In seriousness, these guys are hilarious and informative. Do yourself a favor and subscribe. Thank you for that. That was
Thank you, Dothraki.
That was very, very epic review there. The next one comes from friend of the podcast, Michelle.
What up, Michelle?
What up? She says, memento mori. Like, more. Give more podcasts to us. This is my favorite review because of how flattering she is. She says, this is my new favorite podcast where two hunks laugh and joke about death stuff. I just binged all of the available episodes and can't wait for more. Keep up the great work and don't die. Thanks, Michelle. Hopefully this new episode finds you and more new episodes.
More new ones.
For the next 10,000... No, we probably got, a few years or decades in us.
Shelf life of podcasts is going to be.
Yeah, maybe nuclear warfare will ruin all the podcasts for everyone. But we'll keep going. That was grim. My bad. Let's pick it up a little bit with maybe the most uplifting of all three of these.
Did my mom leave it?
No.
Oh.
The next best thing to like parents leaving messages of affirmation is a dog leaving a message of affirmation.
Oh, cool.
This review is titled Bark.
Whoa.
And it's by Borzoi the Boar's Boy.
Oh, I love Borzoi.
You know who this is?
No, I don't, but this is like... Borzoi are my favorite dogs.
Are they?
Yeah.
They're so...
pointy?
Yeah, just a strange combination of majestic and, like, someone tried to Photoshop a dog's head onto a llama, and then they were like, wait, that's not big enough? But instead of making it proportionally bigger, they just made it longer on the llama head. Anyway... Borzoi the Boar's Boy says, absolutely love this podcast. It's an original concept and provides fresh content every week. That's...
Noel.
That's not true, but...
In dog weeks.
Yeah, it's dog weeks. Every dog week. Max and Dorian are genuinely hilarious and interesting to listen to. There's never a dull moment. We edit out all the dull moments. That's why. Hey, thanks everyone for the 5-star reviews. Not only does it stroke our ego, it also helps push us up a little bit higher in the iTunes rankings and get people to notice our podcast. So we really appreciate that.
Yep.
If you're on any device, just tell a friend about the show, especially if you think they dig anything from brutal death metal album covers.
To cats.
To cats that glow in the dark. Tell us what you think in general. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes or for anything else. What LaCroix flavor we should try next? What kind of toothpaste should I use? I'm going to have to buy some soon. I could use some input. I don't know what your brand of choice is.
Tom's is good.
Tom's. Tom's is that like organic
stuff? Yeah, they have a cinnamon one. That's really good.
Cinnamon?
Yeah.
You can't have a non-mint flavor for your mouth.
Maybe that's why mine is broken and in shambles.
I don't know. It sounds pretty tasty. I'll give it a shot. Anyway, if you have more toothpaste recommendations, you can at us on Twitter or Instagram at PreDeadBoys. You can email us, PreDeadBoys@gmail.com. You can join our Facebook group. Just search Pre-Dead Boys Podcast. Just join that group. There's a page, and I don't know what to do with it yet because I don't know how Facebook pages work. Just ignore that and come join the Facebook page and talk with us about, you know, why you have an interest in death and what interesting death things you are. We're having fun on the conversations on that group.
Yeah, so you should join. We haven't had to kick anybody out yet.
No, everybody's been real chill and we appreciate that. Hey, Max.
What?
Let me tell you something. Podcasting ain't free. It costs money.
Oh.
Not a whole lot of it right now, but...
One day it might.
We pay hosting fees, but we would also like to maybe one day do a field trip or bring on a guest or do other things that cost money. So if you would want to chuck us a little bit of cash, you can go to ko-fi.com/predeadboys and give us a $3 or more tip. That would be dope.
Appreciate that greatly.
It would be gnarly, and it would be radical, and it would be hella fresh. Not hello fresh.
Not hello.
Unless hello fresh wanted to give us money. But one thing at a time. Our intro music is About Time by Brat Curse. You can check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. And that's going to do it for us.
What happened? What happened to you?
What?
The long, a very long pause.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the long now.
Okay.
So I'm doing really long, awkward pauses now.
Zeros in front of all my words.
I'm putting zeros. Yeah. Zeros at the top of all my sentences. Hey, thanks for listening, guys. We will see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I'm gonna fucking start from the top. In the
Utarit. Utreat.
I fucked up the word the. It's coming back. It's an evil bug. I saw Hereditary twice, and I think that there's some residual demon activity that's like possessed my ability to pronounce things. I think that's what's happened.
I did a make your own monster program at the library.
Yeah, I saw the photo of that.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
But I had like a spooky playlist to play while the kids were writing their stories.
Yeah.
And it was going to be like Tom Waits, Nick Cave, like just creepy dark stuff. And then I just played the Hereditary soundtrack.
That's pretty good. Have you seen it yet?
No.
It's probably my favorite movie of the year.
All right. Well, I got to go see Jurassic World 2 twice first. Because I'm an asshole.